to Washington, D.C., and Jerry Bodlander.
Hey, good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy Monday. How are you today?
So how's the snow in D.C.?
The snow is melting. It hit the 40s yesterday, and I think we're getting up to 50. So it really is not an issue anymore, to be very honest with you. The kids had some shortened school days, but that's in the past now. They're going to have to put in the usual hours this week.
Got to make up for it now.
Yeah. Boy, what a deal yesterday with trying to return some people who have been deported to Colombia. And Colombia said, take them back.
Boy, you know, that's just the latest in just a slew of events over the last 48 hours since you talked to Bob and Linda on Friday. It's like drinking from a fire hose. Here we are with a trading partner, and basically President Trump says, listen, you don't want to take these illegal migrants who were deporting back to you. Well, I'm going to slap a 25% tariff on all of your goods. And so, you know, late last night, the White House said that Colombia had blinked. It's going to accept the deported migrants, on military aircraft from the U.S. The interesting thing is that, one, the U.S. has a fair amount of trade with Colombia. There's petroleum, there's coffee, which means it would hit, you know, literally everybody. And the price of coffee went up almost 4% last year. So you can imagine what that would have done. The interesting aspect of all this is that Colombia has taken a whole bunch of civilian flights that carried migrants that the U.S. was expelling. The whole issue here was that they were being sent to Colombia on military flights, and the Colombian president didn't like that. He said it was, you know, the people who were being deported deserved more dignified treatment. And so, you know, after the president threatened tariffs, Colombia threatened tariffs, and finally Colombia says, yeah, we'll accept these migrants that you no longer want in the U.S. You know, the bottom line here is it is a show of sort of force, if you will. You know, the president clearly signaling that he is ready to take economic action even against close allies who don't want to go along with what his administration wants.
Now, you know, it's interesting. This incident kind of took all the air out of the room. But earlier I'd heard that Brazil was concerned about dozens of immigrants arriving in handcuffs. And the foreign ministry was saying they didn't like this degrading treatment of passengers on a flight. There was no need for it. So it's...
Yeah, I mean, the dignified treatment was the line from the Colombian president. And so, you know, you sort of see that with these individuals being sent back to their home countries in handcuffs and in shackles, you've got folks who are basically saying, on the other end, listen, you got to treat them nicely. You know, they'll probably take them back, but they just don't like the way the U.S. is going about this.
I'm just curious as to... You know, was it Colombia that capitulated or the Trump administration that capitulated here?
Well, the White House issued a statement late last night, the press secretary, Carolyn Leavitt, and, you know, it basically said the government of Colombia has agreed to all of President Trump's terms, including the unrestricted acceptance of all illegal aliens. That's now the term the administration is using, aliens from Colombia. That are returned from the U.S., including on military aircraft, which, as I indicated a moment ago, was really sort of the sticking point. So the administration, of course, wants to make it look like Colombia blinked. You know, we haven't really heard Colombia's side of it, but if indeed it was accepting these individuals on civilian flights and really didn't like the fact that they were coming in now on military flights, being escorted by U.S. military members, then you could, I think, say that Colombia blinked and the administration got its way.
But, I know people that went out last night and bought coffee. because, you know, seriously.
Really?
They really thought that that this was going to increase the cost of coffee. And there's a lot of concern about these tariffs that are being threatened and in some cases now imposed, and what that's going to do for our cost of living.
25% he was threatening, and he was going to kick it up to 50% in Colombia in several days.
Yeah. He was going to give it a week's time, and it was going to go to 50% in a week. And, you know, coffee is obviously something that, you know, tons of Americans drink. I personally don't, but, you know, my wife consumes my share, if you will. but you also have, I mean, things like flowers. You have Valentine's Day coming up. You know, that's probably the biggest time for flowers being sold. I don't think, you know, the tariffs probably, you know, if you do a week's time, you're early February, right before the flowers are probably going to be shipped is when the tariffs would have gone into effect. And so you have all of these things that would hit average Americans in the pocketbook. And it's, you know, an argument that Democrats are going to continue to make that, you know, Americans pay the tariffs. It's not the country that exports the goods. And so you had Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez yesterday basically saying, listen, to punish Colombia, Trump's going to make every American pay even more for coffee. And the interesting aspect is that during the campaign, Trump said inflation was the number one issue, but he's now kind of pushed that to the back burner. We've really seen no aspect of the first week's actions that would impact that. He's saying, listen, immigration is my number one issue. So he's sort of changed his tune vis-a-vis, you know, Americans' pocketbooks and what they're feeling. And, you know, yesterday J.D. Vance was on one of the talk shows, I think it was CBS, and he basically said, listen, give it time. You know, we're going to address inflation, which basically says, you know, we'll get to it at some point.
That's sort of like repeal and replace Obamacare.
Yeah, you know, they have to figure out a way. I mean, if you're pushing tariffs, how do you lower inflation? How do you lower the costs? Everybody agrees that increasing tariffs ultimately is going to increase the cost to Americans, because companies that have to eat these costs are not going to eat them all. They may eat some of it, but in the long run, some of the extra cost is going to be passed on to the consumer. And that, of course, is not going to help inflation, no matter how you look at it.
Well, one of the things that that Trump said during the campaign is he was going to use tariffs to replace the income tax.
Look, you know, you can come up with all sorts of ideas, but, you know, implementing tariffs to replace the income tax, you know, is an interesting concept. But then you have to get it into legislative language and come up with ways to actually do these things. It's one thing to say you're going to do something. It's quite another to actually change the tax code. And, you know, there have been arguments in the past couple of years over, you know, what should the top capital gains be? And there are humongous fights over these kinds of things. And certainly, if you want to focus on individual segments of the economy, you know, you have lobbyists that are going to push back on any moves to make their particular sector pay more.
Yeah, now, John, I was thinking about tariffs replacing the income tax. The problem with that is we can see the president threatened this tariff yesterday. And so tariffs could be layered on all the time. You know, there wouldn't be any legislative control of it, apparently. Or do tariffs have to be approved by Congress?
Well, I think they can probably do it unilaterally. I have to admit, I'm not exactly sure. But, you know, the flip side is when it comes to taxes, we all can look at the bottom line of our 1040s and what's withheld from paychecks and go, okay, here's what I'm paying. When it's tariffs, you know, and depending on what each company does with its individual product, you know, there could be a 5% tariff, just to pick a number, and they decide to throw in, you know, a 3% increase on top of that, and all of a sudden you're going, well, it's up 8%, but, you know, the tariff is really only 5, inflation is 3%. You may not have a real sense of exactly what you're paying in addition to what you normally would pay. You know, as far as the tax code, you know, boy, I mean, you see what it takes just to file a 1040. Basically, you have to know a lot of different things. And if you have any kind of deductions, and those have disappeared in the last couple of years to some degree in use, partly because the standard deduction has gone up. But, you know, I mean, I used to bring home a Publication 17 just to try and get myself through doing my taxes. And, you know, that's a couple of hundred pages, and you pick out, you know, how you're impacted. The tax code is crazy, and to say that you can replace it with tariffs, I just don't think you can compare apples to apples there.
Well, one of the points you made about price increases, we've tried price controls before. Back in the 70s, we tried it, and it failed miserably.
Well, you know, you can try price controls. You can try a lot of different things to keep prices down. The difficulty becomes that everybody ends up being impacted, and you have so many different variables that come into play on products. You know, the government can say, you know, a loaf of bread is going to cost $4. The problem is delivering it to a store in inner city, New York, Chicago, L.A., the price is different from delivering it to a store in a very, very rural area. I mean, my in-laws live 12 miles outside of the nearest town, and, you know, to go 25 miles to get a loaf of bread, well, you know, there's a gallon of gas you also had to pay for just to get that. I mean, price controls, you know, have been tried. Yeah, it's really, really hard to do because it gives, you know, you have minimums, you have maximums. There's so much play in there. It's just really, really tough to implement. Yeah.
Well, let's talk FEMA here because we may not have FEMA to kick around much longer.
Well, you know, it was very interesting. You know, the president toured the flooding areas of North Carolina on Friday, then flew out to California, where he saw the results of those horrific fires. And while in North Carolina, he basically said, well, you know, we need to overhaul or maybe even shut down FEMA, let the states deal with the disasters. And that, of course, raised eyebrows everywhere. The press secretary later clarified that the idea is to try to root out bureaucracy and incompetence. But once again, it's a situation where when you're the president of the United States, words matter and people will pick up on those kinds of things. Is there, you know, I don't want to say, is there incompetence in FEMA? Because that's not a fair way to put it. You know, could it be run better? Absolutely. I think everybody would agree on that. The issue of having the states pick up the tabs, you know, I'm just not sure that some states would have the money to do that. You know, Vermont still dealing with the result of its floods 2 years ago. Certainly North Carolina is going to be dealing with the results of those floods from Hurricane Helene for quite some time. It's going to take God knows how many years to rebuild in the L.A. area. And, you know, it was interesting that when he was out in California and he basically said, you know, you're only going to get federal wildfire aid if California changes its water policies and enacts voter ID for elections. Now, that's getting involved in state laws. And the interesting thing was you had a California Democrat pushing back. He's not one that really anybody knows, a guy named Brad Sherman, who basically says, listen, I don't agree with Louisiana on its abortion policy. I don't agree with North Dakota on guns. But you can't force states to change their own laws to you know, get federal money. We're all Americans, and when there's a disaster in one part of the country, people need to help. And you had, you know, a California senator yesterday say that, you know, California, because it is a fairly wealthy state and also the most populous state, it's given the most in aid that has been used for, you know, helping natural disasters in other places. So it feels it should get its fair share. So the bottom line for FEMA probably is going to be, and there was an executive order that the president signed that created a council to sort of look at FEMA. And we should point out only Congress can get rid of FEMA. You know, that's the bottom line. The likelihood is that you're going to have this group that's going to review FEMA, recommend some changes. And you know, look, a lot of people realize that there are reforms that are necessary. There are things that need to be done. But, you know, only the government really has the ability to plan and respond in a huge way when there are natural disasters like fires, floods, hurricanes, you know, Katrina, that kind of thing.
Jerry, as always, we appreciate your great reporting, and thank you for drilling down for us this morning.
It's great to be with you. Have a great day.